You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Hello, and welcome today to this session on global city cooperation in the response to COVID-19. Welcome to all of you. Thanks to you for joining us. My name is Tony Pippa. I'm a senior fellow in global economy and development at the Brookings Institution. I'm looking forward to this fireside chat, though you'll have to excuse the lack of a fireplace here in my family's combined rec room and office. But I'm looking forward to this conversation, you know, and as political leaders and government officials around the world have been seeking to keep their citizens and communities safe and healthy in the response to COVID-19, cities have really been at the forefront and have been taking decisive action. And I'm honored to have two fabulous leaders with us here today, Vittoria Badia and Ambassador Nina Hichigian from two cities, Milan and Los Angeles, that have really been at the center of this crisis. Two cities that have really strong global orientation and that pre-COVID have been prioritizing really the key principles of sustainable development, principles around equity and sustainability in their city strategies and what their aspirations were for their citizens. So we're going to hear about their experiences in providing leadership on this crisis and how they're thinking about moving from the immediate response to longer-term recovery. But one thing we're particularly interested in exploring today is how cities are cooperating globally during this crisis. This is a global pandemic, a virus that knows no borders, and one that has really challenged the multilateral system and the idea of global cooperation. Cities, in addition to taking decisive action, have really been relying upon their own city-to-city networks and relationships with counterparts around the world. And we want to explore what that's meant, explore how that's been helpful, and also explore what the challenges have been as well. So our hashtag today is city cooperation. You can tweet your reactions and comments as we have this conversation. You can also ask questions via that hashtag or by emailing globalmedia@brookings.edu. So before we get underway, just a quick note on bios. Vittoria Badia is the Director for International Affairs at the City of Milan. She served as a United Nations officer in various capacities, so has a great deal of experience in the tradition of global cooperation, both at headquarters in New York City and in field work focused on social and economic development, and she was part of the public-private partnership created by Italy for the World Expo 2015 in Milan before becoming Director of International at the City. He is the first mayor of international for Los Angeles. She served as U.S. ambassador to the U.S. Southeastern Asian and staff National Security Council during the Clinton administration. So I'd like to Vittoria and start the conversation. Can you just talk about what's been the role of the government and your mayor in responding to and managing the crisis, and also a little bit about your own experience and the role that you've played during the crisis?
Yeah, Tony, thanks for the opportunity today. I'll go right into the role of the mayor and the council. We have experienced and we continue to experience a very challenging time. The COVID-19 pandemic has been unexpected and very difficult to tackle. If you want to be instruments that are related to the management of health crisis in general lie with the name of the regional government. But it's important for people to understand that there's plenty of space for city government to take care of its citizens in terms of protection, in terms of having a city that can see services that the same. Transportation and waste management assistance, but become very difficult to manage in situation of high risk of contagion, in a situation in which the majority of the population homebound and need of care. So, basically, a shift from normalcy, so called, to a new. This is what we focused on. Testing function, responding to the needs that were not present before, to the new clients that were autonomous before. I'm thinking, for instance, about the elderly or about a lot of that used to volunteer and support the efforts of civic outreach and support city and we're homebound from overnight. This is also why we were tackling the emergency and CR. The mayor launched something that is called the Mutual Aid Fund of Milan that started right away to think about venues and opportunities for both the support of citizens during the crisis and the recovery phase after, or probably a blending of the recovery and management of the emergency. In my own personal experience, my colleagues, of course, the most important thing is teamwork. All of us to take on additional urgent responsibilities. Re-engineering all the process to respond to what the city was facing and that, unfortunately.
And in that respect, I mean, you know, traditionally your role is on international affairs. Have you had to be doing different things rather than just engaging internationally in the particular role that you have? You've been part of that team.
I would say it's both international engagement on other issues. So, for instance, I'm helping out the emergency team to procure medical equipment from abroad. Helping out, trying to find information for the city that went into the management of the pandemic we did. Of course, it goes both ways in that we do receive information and support and knowledge and pass it on to the ones that are coming after us. We had the misfortune of being the first European city very hardly hit by the crisis, so that we can now pass on information and knowledge that is very quickly developed, because this is a very complicated phenomenon to manage, and the learning curve is very very steep and useful for people to know what they can foresee in terms of the various phases of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's helpful, and we'll get it. Should get a bit more into what it means to be sharing that knowledge and how important it is and how that's been working. But let me turn to you, Nina, and. What's been the role of the mayor of the city government in the crisis in Angeles? And tell us a bit about your own personal experience during the crisis.
Great. Hi, Tony and Victoria. It's nice to be with you. Thanks for doing this. Let me know if I'm not coming through clearly. Just fact of Los Angeles, for those who might not be so familiar with the city, we're the largest city in the U.S. We have about 4 million people. We sit in a county of 10 million people, and we're extremely diverse. 38% of our population is foreign-born. We have some of the largest diaspora communities in the United States and the world. We had the fourth busiest airport pre-pandemic, all of which is they were very open to the world and therefore, in this case, very vulnerable. So very lucky in terms of population. But in terms of the response and the responsibility of the city and there, it's almost impossible to overstate, I would say. We've done just every single thing from setting up our testing sites to procurement of PPE, which continues to be challenging, converting our manufacturing and our garment industries to 3D, doing a face shield, sewing masks, issuing all the orders for residents to stay at home and to wear masks, turning convention center into a hospital, creating new childcare centers for health workers, and putting in addition, ramping for seniors, setting guidelines about what businesses can remain open, which are not many, turning our rec centers into temporary shelters, creating special parking zones outside of restaurants, and then a lot of money individuals and foundations help our most economically state residents, a sizable proportion of whom are undocumented and so aren't going to get any assistance whatsoever. And now, of course, we're thinking and researching how we can open things back up again, which is very challenging. And we're doing all these things, trying to communicate in a very early way with daily press briefings by Mayor Garcetti, which have become, a touchstone for many residents here, I think, like Andrew Cuomo's have for many on the East Coast. And we're doing this all while coordinating with the different jurisdictions and not waiting for them to act, sure they that we are aligned with the county and with state. And then still running basic functions, keeping the power on, keeping the water running and all that stuff. And with a few happy exceptions, I would say this has been all done without federal help. And personally, I mean, it's very intense, but mostly I feel grateful, first of all, to be helping. I think I was most anxious when I, at very in the early days, when I wasn't sure how team was going to fit in. And so that's just who I am. Like, I think I'd feel very nervous if I were not deeply engaged. Feel really grateful for living in Los Angeles, California, with leaders who are making the hard decisions. And my role has changed and my team has changed, but it's still, it's all hands on deck 24/7 kind of a situation.
So Nadia, let me just build on that. It is all hands on deck. People are repurposing. You just talked about multiple ways in which you're having to react quickly to situations as they arise. So you have very little time, and folks are wanting to be efficient and trying to do multiple things at once. So what's the role there of city cooperation, especially under national borders? How is that useful? What are the things that you're finding it important to be able to be reaching out to cities like Milan or others? What gap is filling for you, especially because time is of the essence and is so valuable? Why prioritize?
Right. Let me first talk about the domestic. And I would say that domestically, we are banding together. For example, calling federal government to help us with our devastated budgets. So that's one thing that they're together doing domestically. And sometimes the California cities get together to make a point to the governor about the way some particular program ought to be executed. Internationally, I think we found it most helpful for comparing best practices. You know, we're all doing the same, you know, more or less doing the same kind of things, maybe in different ways in different countries, and with a very similar, although maybe slightly staggered, timeline. So, you know, talking to cities who have gone through something right before you have is been extremely helpful to us.
That's very helpful. And so what I'm hearing is that there's also city-to-city cooperation happening on multiple levels. You've got the cities in California in some ways sharing your experiences and banding together and getting aligned with how you may engage with the state. The cities across the U.S. also, how they might engage nationally with the federal government, and then also sharing and comparing best practices from cities globally. And so, Vittoria, I'm presuming, given that the crisis arrived in Milan early on, that you would be one of the cities that others are seeking to learn from and gain some of those best practices from. And so it would be interesting to hear your perspective on city-to-city cooperation. You might be, you know, hearing from a lot of your counterparts. How do you prioritize that? How do you think about prioritizing that? What does that city-city to cooperation mean for you and sort of the gaps it might be filling as well?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tony. And I very much agree with what Nina said. The approach is very similar. For us in Milan, the city-to-city cooperation is very much the way we function in general. So I would say it has been our natural way to approach these crisis management as well. We didn't think about it. It just came naturally. Both bilaterally with the various cities that we have relationships and work with, and Los Angeles being a very important one of them, and multilaterally through the various city networks we participate into. Right away, you were talking about a possible gap that this would fill. Right away, you feel that for us, you filled an information gap because we didn't have the information that we needed to understand how to react to the crisis, being a little bit in the front line. But that was very quickly, overcome because the spread of the virus was very, very rapid. At the beginning, it was the Chinese colleagues, I must say, that turned to us with offer of information, advice, and also donations of equipment. And then right away, it was more and more cities calling us to get information and technical support because they felt they had to get as ready as possible, as prepared as possible, and they didn't have the information and a clear view of what that would mean at the city level. So how did we prioritize? I don't think we did. We felt under an enormous pressure to be able to help others. We felt that being quick and effective was key. The more we learned and understood in the various technical areas, very, very technical. At some point I got a question, I remember, about the level of alcohol in the sanitation of detergents for the streets. Of course, this is not something I would deal with normally, but I got every possible information and I pass it on. We really felt that at least, given the very bad and sad situation, at least we had to transfer our knowledge, our improvised knowledge, to fellow cities as quickly as possible to contribute to their prevention mechanism, because we really felt daily that these would better contain the virus in their own cities and ultimately this would save lives.
So was this happening through sort of formal channels, informal channels? How are you managing and hearing from other cities? Both from, interesting to hear your engagement with Chinese cities, for example, where the virus started, and then wanting to sort of act quickly and efficiently and pragmatically to help other cities that might be seeing this as well. But was this is this spontaneous? Is it formal, informal? Is it both? How is that being managed?
I think I have to underline that it was extremely quick. It was 24 hours, as Nida said, but it was both. There are formal dialogues taking place. I'd say little by little, every single city network is turned into focusing on COVID-19, even the one that were reluctant at the beginning and they were saying we need to sort of continue with our core mission. I would say the conversation is very much on monopolized by COVID-19 now. So the city networks are active and are helpful, but there's also, as always, the human factor. So the special access to the people that are involved in partnerships that are already ongoing, in special projects, in joint initiatives that are colleagues and often, very often, like-minded professionals and ultimately also friends. So the best example I can think of, and it's not because she's involved, is something that Nina has created, a very informal WhatsApp group that is growing with city members every day, that has become basically the best outlet of information and connects people that, especially what she was mentioning before, the staggering of the phenomenon. This group is connecting people in cities that are at different stages in the management of the pandemic. So it really gets a flow of information that is extremely useful, because even the people that are not facing some problems now, from the experience of other cities, they do understand what they will be facing tomorrow and they are better prepared to do so. So I think this is a very informal but extremely useful example.
Oh, that's really helpful. And Nina, I know that Mayor Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, your mayor, hosted a gathering of mayors through one of those formal networks, the C40 network, which is a city-to-city network working on climate issues. These are cities that have made commitments around climate emissions, and that's usually the primary focus. But to Vittoria's point, sort of within the crisis, feeling like they needed to be activated and act. So tell us a little bit about, how did that meeting come about? Why? And what were some of the focus and outcomes of that meeting?
Yeah, thanks. Just to step back a second. So I think that's an example of a more formal channel, and I'll talk about that. But just like Vittoria, we've had the situations of, you know, one-off, requests. I remember I got a call from a WhatsApp maybe from the Toronto Emergency Management Department, and tried to find someone in our Emergency Management Department to talk to them. It turned out our head of Emergency Management was willing to talk to their head of Emergency Management, and I didn't get a readout of that call afterwards, but I'm sure that was, you know, extremely useful and practical. And second is this this WhatsApp group, which is not perfect. You know, you if you were to design something to share knowledge, you probably wouldn't design a WhatsApp group with everybody asking every kind of question. But it is extremely useful, because you pay attention to the conversations that happened before, and even if they weren't relevant at that point, they become relevant later. And then the C40. So that happened very organically. I mean, C40 is an organization of nearly 100 megacities, all focused on reducing their emissions. It's a very well-run network. It's robustly staffed. There's people all over the world. And cities right now, all they're talking about and all they're focused on is COVID. So being, a network that is all about cities and trying to help cities, you know, it was natural that they would want to turn to help. So the mayor chaired that meeting, and we've done another one since then. Mayor Sala was joined both of those, and then there's another one coming up. And I think it was a really profound moment for him on that first call to realize that we're really all in this together. We had Milan on that call, Seoul, London, Jakarta, Accra, Paris, Delhi, Hong Kong, Freetown, Guadalajara, and then many more as well. All making interventions. I think for that call, on a practical level, I think what it was most useful for, and Vittoria, you can chime in on this, I think it was most useful for the mayors who had not yet seen COVID coming to their to their cities. And I think that it put them on notice that they had to act even much more quickly than they might think that they would need to act. As my mayor has said many times, like, you know, it's not fast enough unless it's not feeling right. If it feels right, it's too late.
Yeah. Victoria, what's that experience from your perspective as well?
I definitely agree with Nina. It was amazing to see over 50 mayors zooming together at the same time and being extremely interactive. I think something that it's very fair to say is that the city-to-city collaboration is an area that is very collaborative. It is not a competitive sort of relationship between cities, even if there is some competitions, namely when you have to, I don't know, compete for sports events or these kind of things. But on average, I always find an extreme openness, a very like-mindedness, I would say. And this comes from the fact that cities across the globe have very similar responsibilities, duties, and needs. So mayors are very quick in clicking with each other, in feeling that they have something to say. It's extremely rare to find two mayors that don't hit off and start discussing about stuff. So obviously, in a situation as challenging as the COVID epidemic, we saw the multiplier effect of this. In our experience, we went into that particular meeting having to probably bring the kind of worst information possible, in the sense that we were the ones to describe what was happening, and at that time the city was really devastated and it was a very sudden and difficult situation to explain. But at the same time, we came out from that meeting with the idea that there was such a potential in terms of brain work behind what C40 could do at this level, that it was our proposal to create a recovery task force. And this is the reason why it is an honor and at the same time a huge responsibility for Mayor Sala, the mayor of Milan, to be adding the C40 effort to round cities together on a post-COVID recovery.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm hearing several different things. One is just a feeling of solidarity and of, as you were saying, sort of combined brain power and the understanding of the similar duties and responsibilities, and also what the dangers were to everyone's citizens and populace, and being able to support each other on that. And then to be thinking about what it looks like together, both in terms of the immediate response, but what it will look like in terms of recovery. So just one question before, because I want to turn a little bit towards recovery and how we're thinking about that. And we've got questions from the registrants and from the audience, but you talked about sort of both the one-on-one bilateral relationships, informal channels, the WhatsApp group, and now we're talking a little bit about the more formal city-to-city networks, C40 set up, you know, pre-COVID. Nina, as you said, a fairly robust network, staff, worldwide perspective and worldwide presence. What's been the intersection with the traditional multilateral system? Victoria, you served, you know, in the United Nations. Nina, as an ambassador, you obviously intersected with sort of the nation state traditional multilateral system. What's been has there been interaction? What's been the interaction with that? I mean, you're relying on the relationships you have with each other and cooperating globally in that respect. Has it intersected or not with sort of the traditional system? Be great to get your perspectives on that. And that's not necessarily the way the system was set up. So that's I'm not trying to judge, but it would just be interesting to understand sort of how these two different types of global cooperation intersect or not, especially in this crisis. Victoria, just whatever perspective you have on that.
I mean, the one thing I can think of is obviously European focus, but for us it's very important to bring the collective views of cities to the European Union institutions. And this is an example that comes to mind is the fact that with the thinking that came from the very hard hit cities of Italy and Spain, there was a letter that was recently sent by the mayors of Barcelona, Milan, and together with Amsterdam and Paris to the European Union institutions. Basically to say there's a voice of cities that can be very helpful in your thinking about how to tackle the crisis collectively, earmark financial assistance and direct it to the cities. In discontinuity with the approach that was applied after the last the financial crisis, for instance, in 2008, basically the mayors wrote, we have lived through that time, we have learned a lot, the cities have had the duty and the braveness at the same time to respond at the city level, that a lot we can contribute, consider as allies. This is something definitely that I can think of in terms of an engagement, immediate engagement that came through the midst of the crisis.
That's helpful. Nina, what's your perspective on that? So what's been the experience from Los Angeles' point of view?
We have gotten emails from, you know, like the OECD and others that have, you know, compiled, you know, guides and things like that, which we haven't had time to read, but we get those. Other than that, I'm just racking my brain here. I can't really think of an interaction that we've had with the multilateral system. It would be great if we did. I think there's probably a lot of benefit in making those channels a bit thicker. I know that some cities have used, I guess we've all in some ways used World Health Organization guidance, you know, but for us, I guess it's filtered through the CDC. So I suppose there's that angle. And then, you know, the only other connection that I can think of right now is that I know there are some folks in Los Angeles in the esports or entertainment world who have done benefit work for the WHO, but I can't think of really a particularly direct connection, unfortunately. One other quick thing which we haven't touched on, but there's really a beautiful phenomenon of of donations coming from foreign cities and from diaspora communities, and sometimes from our local diplomats working with the diaspora community or with their home government. And so we've gotten, you know, lots of masks and other kinds of PPE equipment from various cities, and that's been you know, just a very lovely gesture. And I just wanted to mention that.
Well, I'm glad
Same
you mentioned
here.
One of the issues I wanted to touch on a little bit was procurement. Both of you raised procurement and the importance of it in getting the supplies that you need actually to be able to respond and ensure that people are protected and safe. What's been the role of the city-to-city cooperation, getting the materials that you have? And has there been talk of just sort of global cooperation so that there's less competition and more cooperation in making sure that materials get to where they need to go as well? Nina, is that something that you have a perspective on?
Yeah, I love the idea of global cooperation for procurement. It's the kind of thing that we're scrambling so furiously that we haven't had time to kind of build that sort of a structure. I mean, it's really challenging in the United States because we, you know, we're all going to this. First of all, there's a flood of offers, most of which turn out to be useless. And then when we actually have secured supply, we've had all kinds of issues. Like sometimes we've been outbid by other municipalities. Sometimes it turns out to be counterfeit. We've heard of nearby, not in our county, but nearby counties where it's seized by FEMA. So it is really, really challenging to just get the equipment that we need, that just the, you know, the N95 masks and the gowns and the gloves and such. You know, I've at the very least, it should be done by a federal. It should be done federally, in my view. but doing it globally is a lovely idea. And you know, we should certainly be thinking about trying to do something like that before the next crisis.
Yeah. Well, Victoria, it sounds like Milan benefited from Chinese counterparts actually in getting what you needed at the very outset of the crisis as well.
Yes, I would say mostly from Chinese cities. And I think, I mean, looking at it in retrospective, I think it was particularly because at the beginning, they were probably the only ones that understood what was happening and saw that we were lost. But then I must say the overwhelming support from cities came from everywhere. We got letters and emails and calls, of course, from our long-standing partners. Like, we have a sistership relationship with Chicago that is 50 years old, and many other cities in the world. So the usual one, but also cities we were not formally linked with. They reached out just to say, we feel for you, but you can do it. We know Milan because of your design, food, culture, and everything. We want to be back. We will be back. We will enjoy being back. There was really a stream of support from everywhere. And in terms of very concrete donations that kept us going for a while, and we are extremely grateful to our sister cities around the world and friend cities around the world for that. I must say it was overwhelming how we got things shipped out of multinationals and at the same time individual families. Just people that had visited as tourists and were saddened by the images that they saw on TV and managed to reach out and send 100 masks. That it was really, I would say, very, very touching, very, very intense as a feeling.
I think it's important that we don't underestimate the feeling of support and solidarity that such relationships bring, especially in a time of such crisis and danger and people going through, you know, very difficult times. I'm going to switch a little bit now to some of the questions that I'm seeing from the audience that are coming out over Twitter. And this is interesting. And one is a question around how COVID-19 might be changing how cities see the role, or citizens see the role of their cities as a provider of security, which is a role that's generally played by a national government. And, you know, how are you experiencing that? And what's your thoughts on what the long-term implications might be for cities' roles in global affairs because of that? Nina, if you've got a perspective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a really interesting question. So I wrote a book with Mona Sefan back in 2007, and we identified as the major national security threats, ones that could kill your citizens in your, you know, here in the United States. And so pandemics, terrorism, climate change were the three major ones that we chose. So if you look at national security in that sense, then mayors are directly involved, you know, in the response. On a daily basis, obviously, you know, the mayors have police and fire under their command. So those are also forces that are on a daily basis, you know, keeping citizens safe. But I do think that in the era of these forces that cross borders, that it's going to be mayors who have to solve the problems. I mean, these are our citizens, they're our neighbors. This is our job, is when they are being threatened to act. And at the same time, obviously, we're urbanizing as a world. And there are more and more people who are going to be living in cities. So I think the role of mayors in security is just going to increase.
Victoria, what's your thought about how that also might? What's the implications of that for cities and how they might have to engage globally and in global conversations and global policies around that?
I believe the one of the angles that are extremely interesting to see in this crisis and the way we reacted is the communication level. So mayors always say, we are the closest institutions to people. So it doesn't really matter whether some service falls under the purview of the city itself. The citizens expect responses. The citizens know who you are, where you live. They may meet you in the street. And this is it's banal, but it's extremely it's an image that is extremely clear to show how the linkage between local and global really works if you take the point of view of cities. So the fact that cities are knowledgeable and accountable at the same time. I would say to respond to your question, my thinking is that we are increasingly mindful of the fact that cities are engaging more and more, and also of the fact that this is becoming more evident. The fact that cities coming together are stronger interlocutors can actually strike better deals sometimes with supranational institutions, their own national counterpart or federal counterpart. We have in mind the tangible results that have been extremely visible during the Paris Agreement process, for instance, which has really opened up. It was a paradigm shift in a way of opening up what cities can contribute. So it's not a matter of revendicating power or sit at the table. It's a matter of saying, hey, we are those who concretely know what is going to happen if the COVID-19 hits, if a terrorist attack hits, if there's a natural disaster, if the heat waves will continue in this way. It's very factual.
Yeah. And to Nina's point, it's also the responsibility of you've got the responsibility for first responders and for the immediate response of what actually happens if and when that occurs. How are you cooperating with universities, and are you cooperating also? Are you having international organizations, whether they be non-governmental or multilateral, that you're cooperating with that normally you might not have had a partnership with? Have new things happened with sort of external organizations and stakeholders because of that, of this? Vittoria, is there any examples you would point to?
I don't think there's anything brand new. Maybe it's too soon for that. There's definitely strengthening of linkages. There's definitely, as Nina was saying before, streamlining of efforts. So we go very efficiently to those city networks, university partnerships, multilateral cooperation that bring results right away. I see it more, maybe because the city of Milan was really very engaged already, but I see it as a deepening of relationships more than widening. Maybe we didn't see that. We didn't need that. I see it more as a new perspective, like we are part of Eurocities and C40 and the Mayor's Migration Council and the U20 and, of course, the Milan Urban Food Policy Pact. All these things are coming together under the pressure and at the same time, I don't want to say opportunity, which sounds like a too positive word, but the situation that potentially creates a catalyst time period for people to become more open to innovation, to find new solutions, to respond to problems that are very urgent and sometimes tragic, but at the same time open up for new way of looking at things. Just if we want to keep on honoring the same commitments that we had before. And for us, I would say, namely, if I had to name the three areas that we are most concerned about, is the environment, inequality, and at this point, very much the health of our citizens.
Well, let's turn to that. And as we think about, you know, what happens next, and Nina, you know, I know that as a city government, you're under intense pressure, even just financially right now. And you can talk a little bit about the plan that the mayor has talked about just for city government, where I know that you're having to look at furloughs and things like that to just be able to manage finances. So in an environment like that, you are a city that was very focused on addressing issues of inequality, on addressing issues of climate and sustainability. You've been one of the leaders, a global city in that respect. How do you balance that? And are you thinking differently about those principles of development and sustainable development as you look toward recovery? I know you're a city that had even, committed to achieving the sustainable development goals, for example, as a city. How do you balance both the financial pressure and the pressure of getting the economy underway with sort of these principles and commitments and priorities to sustainability? And how are you thinking about that?
I mean, that's a giant question. The mayor addressed it a little bit last night, because it was Earth Day yesterday. So he talked about it in his daily press conference. We're going to look forward to Mayor Sala telling us how we balance these things, but we're absolutely committed to balancing them. Putting both sustainability and equality at the center of our recovery. As the mayor says, you know, this is not just a time to reopen, it's a time to reimagine. So in a way, there could be opportunities to rethink some of the things that we wouldn't have before. He has pointed to how clean the air is in Los Angeles right now, and how blue the sky is. And it's not an easy question to answer. All I can tell you is that we're not going to lose sight of those core principles, because that's, you know, who we are as a city. There's the more kind of nuts and bolts of how you begin to reopen. That's the kind of phase where, we hope to be entering in once our cases. The rate of increase of our cases is getting slower and slower, but they're still increasing, and deaths are still increasing. But massive testing. I think we've done a pretty amazing job of setting up testing. We can now do 12,200 tests per day, and we've done over 120,000, but that's still not enough. And that's key. The mayor has proposed, along with the Oklahoma City mayor, who's a Republican, has proposed something called a CARES Corps, which is, you know, like the Peace Corps or Teach for America, a group of putting people to work who are unemployed now in doing all the contact tracing and tracking, which is a huge job. And then we need some monitoring of how that, real time somehow of live cases. And then of course, all the R&D that's going to need to go to, a new, vaccine and new sorts of treatments for the disease. So, and then not to mention an increase in hospital capacity too. So all that stuff we have to get right, as we are beginning to think about, or at least can see on the distant horizon, a time of beginning to reopen. One other thing I'd mention is that, I mentioned it before, but it's just worth the level of economic impact is going to be really intense. We are all going to, the city government itself is going to have furloughs, and we will probably need to cut some services. But cities in the United States are a big part of the economic engine. I think LA County contributes more to national GDP than any other county. But if you take all the big urban areas together, we account for a lot of the economic activity, and we are going to be majorly hurting. We started this program for the lowest income folks in Los Angeles, which has just been raising money from private individuals and foundations. And on the first day that we opened it, this is like cash assistance of I can't remember the exact figure, like $500 or $1,000, depending on the size of your family. We got 450,000 applicants for those cards from not just LA, but like all around. You have to be an LA resident. But just to give you a level, I mean, there's going to be very major economic desperation. And so in all this, we're trying to take care of the most vulnerable also.
Yeah, well, I can see in an environment in which you're going to have enormous pressure to be able to act quickly and get people, address people's needs and challenges quickly and get the economy, as you say, jump started quickly. And that's not just important for LA, but as you mentioned, it's important for the country as a whole because of the combined power of the urban economy and urban GDP. At the same time, as you're mentioning, and you're being innovative in that, like there's, you know, putting that fund together. You both spoke about funds, of private donations coming in, but putting that fund together, even putting like the CARES Corps together where you would take the unemployed and get people both back to work, but also being healthy and safe. So it sounds as if you're still thinking, like, as you said, the next steps are reopening versus long-term recovery, but there's an opportunity to reimagine as you go. And Vittoria, I know Milan, you've been starting to think about this a little bit, and then you have even come out with a commitment around looking at the clean skies that Nina talked about in LA. I think it's similar in Milan, and it came out with a commitment around trying to transform city streets so that you are reducing the car use and keeping the car use low as you come back to recover. So talk a little bit about the ways in which you've been thinking about recovery and those three goals that you talked about around the environment, around inequality and health. How are you thinking about that and trying to integrate that while you also balance the pressures of moving quickly and moving decisively and get the economic activity going again?
Yes. Thank you, Tony. And I very much share what Nina said. Milan, as the city itself, contributes about 10% of Italian GDP. So there's a huge responsibility to get the economic engine moving. While in fact, the situation in terms of the health crisis is not very conducive. I believe we are all concerned about the potential brutal effects of this crisis: unemployment, inequality increasing, economic development interrupted, environmental degradation. These are all potential effects. The mayors are both concerned, at the same time motivated to turn these negative experience, let's say, into a catalyst of innovation and especially acceleration of the goals that we had with the aim of cities becoming better cities. So the example you were saying, it's a program that is called Open Streets. It's an acceleration of what we had in mind that it has now been optimized. The thinking has been accelerated and optimized by the need to think about reopening. I believe the idea behind our strategy and also the idea behind the proposal to C40 to have an ad hoc recovery group is to ensure that we do not step back in terms of what we were aiming at before the crisis, and we do not leave anybody behind, which is easier to say than to do. But the idea is that if we keep on being guided by the principles that inform us, as Nina was saying, and are more creative and more innovative in the way we turn the constraints and limitations of this experience in terms of safety and everything into opportunities to change the way the city lives. We are talking about changing the opening hours and the timetable of the cities, moving the cars out of some lanes to get the cyclists to move along those lanes and to create almost sort of alternative mass transportation, which is individual based. I'd say that there's a lot that we can do strengthening the ideas that we had before and using them to respond to the new needs. And I also wanted to say, you referred to the SDGs before. I think the SDGs will be the natural framework we will all refer to because they are a North Star in terms of helping us keeping all the interconnectedness of all the goals that we will be pursuing together in order to be, as you said, quick and effective in responding to the very demanding needs that we have at the city level now.
Well, it's inspiring to hear that. And I also imagine that it's a place where global cooperation around these particular types of principles and these priorities could be really helpful, because it can send a signal to investors, national governments, global institutions, as this is the type of recovery that cities and mayors are really looking for their citizens. And Vittoria, back to the comment that you had made earlier about being closest to your citizens, you're sort of channeling the voice on the global stage. And so likely a place where global cooperation could be really helpful. We're coming up on our time, so I want to ask another question that we had gotten from the audience, and then just close with give you both an opportunity to provide some final comments. But one interesting question that we haven't really touched on this is there a way that you're thinking about or seeing gender as something that you need to be sensitive to, both in the response and the recovery? Are you incorporating a gender lens in some way into this coordination and response? Nina, what's been the experience in Los Angeles? Because I know that's something that the mayor had even done, you know, executive directives on beforehand, pre-COVID. So
yeah, he is. Has an amazing track record on gender equality in city government, in terms of equal pay, in terms of, you know, increasing hiring for in non-traditional professions like firefighting and computer programming and the like. And I think it's really part of how we work. It's integral to how we work. He has a gender strategy that goes across all departments and as well as all the mayor's office. So there are just a lot of women in leadership. And so I think it's part of how we operate. I'd say in terms of the specifics, we have an odd phenomenon right now where the reported cases of domestic violence are going down, but we suspect that there is more, the police suspect there is more of it happening. So we've been trying to, figure that out and increase, and at the same time, women are not moving out of domestic shelters the way they were. So we've secured hotel rooms, again, using those private funds, secured hotel rooms so that there's more capacity. So that's one specific example, as well as like setting up childcare centers for healthcare workers is another particular example that might affect women more. But I'd like to think it's just part of how we operate every day.
Oh, that's helpful. So as we close, just Vittoria, where do you think Milan might be by year's end? Where would you hope you would be by year's end? And scientifically, I think that's hard to predict. We don't know really what's going to continue. There's still a lot of uncertainty as to the path of the pandemic and whether it might even reemerge. But what are your hopes and what are you thinking for Milan by year's end?
We do really hope to be able to welcome visitors and tourists and people that come and go for business reasons and for culture. We don't know when, but this is really our desire. Milan is a city that has always been extremely open. We are a city with 27 centuries of history. And the idea is to be open and to bring to the city the richness of the outside world. So we are really suffering from having been cut off this sort of virtuous mechanism. We are very confident on the fact that we will bounce back. We know that it's not going to go, this will not mean going back to our old normalcy. We look forward to find a new normalcy at some point. There might be some on and off now, we will see in terms of the pandemic. But the new normalcy, that if we do things right and we have the opportunity to do things right, will put us on a better trajectory than the one we had before the crisis. So this is why we feel that we will be more appreciated and even more attractive in the future. We look forward to this.
Thank you. Nina, final thoughts from you also on Los Angeles and where you're tending towards and hope to be.
I hope that we have done some of that reimagining in a concrete sense of how we're going to how we're going to go into the future in a slightly different way. I hope that our most vulnerable populations of undocumented and homeless and just, you know, people who are very, very low income have a safety net, and that we've been able to provide for that. And that we can, you know, that enough businesses have restarted, that unemployment is maybe in a different way, but that unemployment isn't going to be such a challenge. And I, like Victoria, also hope that we can once again welcome visitors and tourists. That's also very much part of our culture and DNA. And that we've avoided the potential spike in fall cases that some people have been talking about because of our, you know, testing and tracking system.
Well, thanks very much for spending some time with us and for the leadership that both you and your mayors and city governments are providing in this time of crisis. I love the sense of optimism and innovation and aspiration that we're ending on. Let's make that become viral as we go forward. But thanks very much. This has been a really rich discussion, and thanks for the showing a window and shedding a light on the global cooperation that's happening as well, and how reinforcing and important that is. So thanks very much. And we look forward to, and good luck to us all as we go forward.
Yes, to us all. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Ciao.